It has been such a long off season, but finally now on the Roughing the Kicker podcast, we are here to talk about an actual game. I mean, it was a fake game, preseason game, mostly just the backups played, but it's football. I'm going to take it. Welcome to Roughing the Kicker here on ArrowheadAddict.com, Arrowhead Addict Radio. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. You can follow me on Twitter at JBBriscoe. If you like the show, let me know. Give me some feedback. Get your opinions on. We're going to have some tweets throughout the season, fan feedback, whatever you want to hear about. But on this episode, oh, it's real game time. We're talking about an actual game. The Kansas City Chiefs beat the Arizona Cardinals in the preseason. Also going to talk about training camps that led up to that game, stuff we learned through the camps, through the games, and then some national news that affects the Chiefs extremely directly. Plus, the Chiefs are getting some national love. We'll talk about that a little bit, but then especially going to focus in on a few players who they either had a really interesting preseason game or are going to play a huge part in the season coming up. Looking at the preseason performances of Eric Fisher, Chase Daniel, Charkandrick West, Fred Williams, a bunch of other guys that you're going to want to know about before the actual season gets here. And yeah, I know it was a preseason game. That outcome doesn't actually matter, but we're talking about real football that happened on a field that we all got to watch on TV. I won't feel this way in a month, but right now, that almost feels real. Before we get to the real football, let's get to the practice for real football. Back to training camp for just a second here. Cut way down the Cliff's Notes version of training camp leading up to the Cardinals game. The offensive line shuffle continued. If Jeff Allen could be the answer at right tackle, we'd all be happy with that. And then Donald Stevenson could be playing left and right tackle as the swing guy. He played some time at the swing tackle in 2013. But the downside there is if Stevenson's better, he just should be playing the right tackle spot. Now, right tackle is the one position on this team I think I have the least faith in. So I'm glad that there's competition, even if it's not a super high ceiling between Stevenson and Allen. I'm glad that we can at least sit back and believe, okay, the better of those two guys will actually get the job as long as they stay healthy and everything. Chris Conley caught his first pass with the first team back on Monday. He did not play in the preseason game. Charkandrick West got some reps with the first team on Monday, which was a little bit of a foreshadowing for all the work he would get in the preseason game. And then Andy Reid said on Monday that the offensive line combo of Fisher, Grubbs, Morse, Fulton, and Allen seemed to be working, and that is what started in the preseason game. Then on Tuesday, there was no Jeremy Maclin, no Albert Wilson, so the Chiefs were using a lot of Frankie Hammond, Jason Avant, Fred Williams, and DeAnthony Thomas, names that all showed up in the preseason game. So without Maclin or Albert Wilson there, the two most important receivers on this Chiefs team, in my opinion, the lower-tier guys got a bunch of work. Then on Wednesday, Justin March began his march to relevance. I didn't write that, I just came up with that because I'm clever. Therese Paylor said he lit somebody the hell up. Josh Malga was not practicing. Ramique Wilson was playing. And then so March got a bunch of run with the first team. The inside linebacker position basically got run over with injuries. DJ Alexander ended up in the injury tent. So Justin March got a lot of run and some interesting hype. And then again showed up in the preseason game. We'll get to that as well. Reed said, though, about Justin March on Wednesday, quote, "I like March. Tough kid. We're excited about him. Anytime you can get a college free agent like that and he's playing as well as he's playing, that's a positive thing." Now, in a huge way, we've talked about these inside linebackers from the draft, DJ Alexander and Ramique Wilson, and also Dave Taub saying that the way for those guys to make the team is going to be through special teams. That's going to be the same for Justin March and Desmond Moses, who I'll talk about, had a really nice preseason game as well. So the Chiefs have kind of a wealth at the inside linebacker position, or really the linebacker positions as a whole. Some of those guys are a little more versatile than others. Obviously, we know the stars at the top, and Dee Ford is going to be there. But and obviously Derek Johnson. Everywhere else, there is competition for the backup spots. We expect Josh Malga and Derek Johnson and Tom Bahaly and Justin Houston to be the starters. Dee Ford's the next man up. Everybody else, though, there is a ton of competition at the linebacker spot. The Chiefs will let go. The Chiefs will release at least one good linebacker. I would say the Chiefs will probably release at least two linebackers who will have a spot on an active roster on a team when the regular season begins. That's how deep the Chiefs have become inside linebacker. Now, the problem might be if the ceiling isn't very high. They've got a lot of mid-level guys. The problem will come if none of those mid-level guys become upper-tier guys. That's what happened with the run defense last year. Derek Johnson got hurt. Nobody rose up. Although this year, they have a lot more of the middle-of-the-road guys, with all of which have that potential to be a real playmaker. Kansas City Chiefs 34, Arizona Cardinals 19. I've missed that. Now, obviously, the final score was not the most important thing from this game. Game one of the preseason. But what was the most important thing is probably up for debate. You could say it's whatever the first team does. You think it has to do with some of the players who really showed up later on, some of the bottom of the roster players fighting for their stuff. So I'm going to take this from the top, kind of chronologically through the game, and then we'll pause whenever something really stands out. So the first team got on the field first, obviously. The first team defense, first three plays, they started with six or more guys on the line of scrimmage. And then on the long pass play, it was a short throw from Carson Palmer to Andre Ellington. Ellington beat Abdullah, got past Derek Johnson. The loading up on the line of scrimmage early was interesting, and obviously Bob Sutton, the defensive coordinator, is not showing his full hand during the preseason, nor should he be. But I think it's interesting to keep an eye on how that line of scrimmage setup goes, for the most part, without Dontari Poe. I don't know if Sutton thinks that that's going to make the run look more difficult, if that's going to be a more intimidating pass rush front, or if we see them run a whole lot more of a 4-3, which I talked about last couple of weeks with Poe gone, with four down linemen. Later on, we saw them have two down linemen and just the guys on the edges standing up in a two-point stance, and then three linebackers behind them, or even not even three linebackers, maybe a couple linebackers and extra corners, extra secondary guys, whatever. There's going to be a lot of versatility with this defense, and they're going to go at it a lot of different ways. We saw that from the very first few snaps on offense. So the Cardinals have that pass, kind of a short little crossing thing to Ellington, who beats Abdullah, gets past Derek Johnson, then takes it for something like 40 yards. And then the defensive line held up on the goal line twice. There was one great tackle from Derek Johnson, who looked perfectly Derek Johnson-y, which is great news coming off of his injury. And then four defenders smothered Ellington after DJ got to him first. But then on the third play, in the red zone, Ellington went to his right, got in. Houston and Derek Johnson both got pushed back whenever Ellington went to the right. And Marcus Peters hesitated, I would say, just a moment, just a split second too long. He ended up sort of making the tackle as Ellington went into the end zone. If Peters charges at Ellington and even, you know, just tries to cut him out at the knees, I think there's a chance the Chiefs stop him on the goal line there. So that's something where Marcus Peters isn't going to typically be in the stop the run at the goal line formation. That's not going to be his forte. But if he would have charged Ellington there a little bit more, I think we might have seen that touchdown get stopped there on the goal line. That whole first series, a few takeaways. Derek Johnson looked great. The pressure was pretty good. Jay Howard at nose tackle and that whole defensive line held up well against the run for the most part. But that one quick pass to Ellington was whenever Carson Palmer was under pressure. I couldn't tell if that was more of a coverage issue where someone just missed their assignment, or if that was a play where it's sort of designed that you're going to leave someone open and the entire purpose is just to get to Palmer before he can find the open guy. He found the open guy. It was Ellington. Stretched it out. He turned into 7 points for the Cardinals. Then when the offense took the field, the offensive line was Eric Fisher, Ben Grubbs, Mitch Morse, Zach Fulton, and Jeff Allen. Now, that was pretty much what we had seen in training camp. Eric Cush battling an injury right now, so Morse gets the start at center. Smith, on the very first play, might have had his cleanest pocket of the night. He took a deep shot to Jeremy Maclin down the side. The coverage was pretty good, although at the time, people were talking about, you know, if the coverage just isn't there that tightly, that's a huge play to start the game. But after rewatching it a couple of times, if Smith gets the ball a little closer down the sideline, it's probably complete even with the coverage. Maclin had to come in a little bit, which took him right into the corner who was on him there. So that was not a perfect throw by Smith. But if it's a little closer to the sideline, if the defender misses a little bit, it's probably complete. And if the defender stumbles into Maclin, you're going to get pass interference calls on those pretty frequently. So the fact that the Chiefs have an actual threat down the field, I think we're going to see them start off games with deep passes to Maclin pretty frequently. Just to remind the defense that, hey, you've got to account for this. This Chiefs offense is now capable of going deep as long as Smith can hit the guy. Then there was a short pass to Travis Kelce on a major misdirection play that was really nice. Everybody went to the right. Kelce went left. Smith did the play action and then rolled out, hit Kelce. Kelce cut it up after yards after the catch, got the first down. Niall Davis did not look very good on this drive. He had one nice play later on, but for the most part, Niall Davis did not look very good, and I don't think Niall Davis is very good. Now, I think he's a fine replacement-level back, a guy who can get a few carries a game, but I've been saying throughout this whole offseason, the one issue with Niall Davis, it's not his physical tools is the problem. It's his vision. You can say the same thing about Trent Richardson. I know a lot of people were tweeting this screen cap or gif of Trent Richardson getting the ball for the Raiders on the goal line, and he runs into the back of, like, four offensive linemen when there's legitimately a 6 to 10 foot gap just one cut to his left that he could have taken. Niall Davis has a little bit of that issue also. His vision is subpar, and I think his physical tools are a little bit overrated. He did not start off well here. There's no Jamaal Charles in this game, which is perfectly fine with me. I'll talk more about running backs in a little bit. The Chiefs had 3rd and 12. The Cardinals blitzed and rushed 6. Obviously, 6 guys got pressure through this offensive line. Jason Avant was open. Smith really short-armed it if you watch the replay. He threw a solid yard behind Avant. It got picked off. A little bit of return. Smith made the tackle. Bad interception by Alex Smith. And yes, there was pressure. And I said all last season, I gave Alex Smith a whole lot of breathing room because of how little breathing room he got from his offensive line. The offensive line was a huge detriment to Smith last year. But in this case, you have 6 guys rushing you. You've got to find the open man. That's what Carson Palmer did. That's why the Cardinals actually scored on their first drive and their only drive with the first team offense. The first team defense then on the second drive on that interception looks really good. It's really hard, though, to judge a defense based on how they look against Drew Stanton and the second team of the Arizona Cardinals. But the defense held up, forced a field goal. Then the first team offense came back on the field for their second drive. Donald Stevenson came in for the injured Jeff Allen. He looked pretty good. Early on, then, Smith got a nice pocket, threw on first down again, rifled one to Albert Wilson for about 16 yards. It was a good route, good separation by Albert Wilson. And that's going to be the key, I think, for that relationship this season between Albert Wilson and Alex Smith. I don't know how many receivers Smith actually trusts to be at the right place at the right time. I think it's probably only Macklin and Wilson, maybe Jason Avant, although that play earlier on that interception makes me doubt that. And he's hardly seen Macklin. I think he had one completion to Macklin all night whenever they were both on the field at the same time. So I think Albert Wilson might end up being the security blanket other than Travis Kelce and other than Jamaal Charles, the technically receiver safety blanket for Alex Smith this season. Then the next play, there was an edge blitz that almost got to Alex Smith, and I think this play is fascinating. So if you haven't seen it, I'm going to link. I made a video of this play. I'll link to it in the article here on Arrowhead Addict. The next play, the edge blitz almost got to Smith, and then Kelce made a nice adjustment from the right side of the offensive line. He dives up, essentially, gets Smith 1/2 second of breathing room, forces the blitzer behind him, and then Smith turns the corner around the left side to run to the first down, which was a nice play, a nice scramble by Smith. And at first, that made me nervous because I'm tired of seeing Alex Smith have to run away to make a play for him to be able to stay in the pocket and hit somebody. But the whole offensive line got kind of jumbled. Kelce pushed the guy behind him, but one guy completely locked up his man and made this play happen, and that was Eric Fisher. He had his guy locked up for a solid 4 or 5 seconds while Smith scrambled. The rest of the offensive line just slid guys around. If Fisher would have tried to force his man outside, which is usually the right move if you're a tackle, Smith would have gotten completely eaten up. But Fisher held up in essentially completely open field, and it sprung that play wide open. Again, that video will be in the article here. I think this is a great sign of what Eric Fisher might be able to be. We've had questions about just how physically strong he is, but he held up against the rush here. His hands are in perfect position. And again, everything around Eric Fisher was moving. Kelce bought Smith that extra second to keep him from getting eaten alive. It was a good block by Kelce. The rest of the offensive line kept it respectable, I guess, although Smith was clearly under pressure. He had to run away. But everybody else on that field was moving, except for Eric Fisher, who he and the guy who he was blocking, whoever that was, just were not moving. They stayed within a couple of yards of a circle the whole play. And because of that, it gave Smith a corner to turn, and it gave him a chance to get that first down. So those sorts of plays from Eric Fisher. I don't think I saw Eric Fisher have one bad play in this entire game when he was on the field, and that is hugely encouraging. I've been saying for a while, through this whole offseason really, this is a make-or-break season for Eric Fisher. Either he's going to take a step up or he's going to take a step out of Kansas City, and the Chiefs are probably going to spend their first-round pick next year on a left tackle. Plus, Andy Reid has said that Eric Fisher looks like he could be the breakout player for the Chiefs this year. Fox Sports had an article about Eric Fisher. Gil Brandt wrote, quote, "I've talked to people who say he's the most improved player in camp so far. I feel pretty good about my off-season drum beating for the improvement of Eric Fisher. I think he's going in the definite right direction, and we saw a little bit of that in this preseason game as well." On the rest of that drive, Niall Davis had an okay run. There was a screen for no gain to DeAnthony Thomas. Fisher stuffed his guy again. Smith tried to force it into Thomas. It got knocked away. It would have been a really difficult catch if D'Anthony Thomas would have really attacked the ball, he might have been able to pull it in. Trent Green on the broadcast got on him a little bit for that, but that's something that's going to really have to develop in D'Anthony Thomas's game as a receiver, because he just hasn't been used that way very much in his career so far. The second team defense then came in for their first drive. The Cardinals couldn't get anything going. A Justin March tackle for loss on 3rd and 1, forced the punt. There was pressure from D Ford on the drive. It was a good run by the second team defense there. First team offense came back out again on 1st down. Smith put it high up on Macklin for the first. And there was a very nice run then by Nile Davis. It's definitely his best run of the game. There was a fantastic lead block by Donald Stevenson, who was again in at right tackle. Hit his guy. He ran out in front of him. It reminded me, and this is going to sound like very high praise, it's totally inappropriate, but it reminded me of some of the highlights of whenever Will Shields would pull from the guard spot and go lead block. Stevenson was just getting out ahead of Davis and making a path for him. So that was great. And then Davis limped off. He did not return to the game. Give you injury updates at the end of the show here. Then there was another short check down to Travis Kelce. Didn't do much. And then there was a short 1st down from Smith to Frankie Hammond, but it was challenged by Arizona, ruled incomplete. And then it was 3rd and 5, and Smith threw a 3-yard pass to Albert Wilson when they needed 5 yards for the 1st down. I hate that play so much. The Chiefs did this so much last year, and I'm going to just go off the rails now. I hate it so much when a team, it's 3rd and 5, fine if you want to pass the ball, I get it. You don't feel confident in getting that yardage on the ground, whatever. I would say run it usually and then have another chance on 4th down, depending on where you are in the field. In this case, it would have made sense. It was in Cardinals territory, but it's a preseason, whatever. Fine, throw the ball. But Albert Wilson or whoever called the play, don't run a 3-yard route on 3rd and 5. It was complete. But there was a guy between Wilson and the 1st down marker because it was a defensive player. That's his job. He did his job well. So then Wilson ran backwards a bunch and tried to run around. Yeah, obviously he didn't get the 1st down. It was 3rd and 5. He threw the ball 3 yards. I hate that play. That's going to happen 15 times this season, and I'm gonna freak out every single time. I hate that play so much. 48-yard field goal nailed by Cairo Santos, who I've missed saying his name. And then the second team defense came in. In sort of a summary of what the defense did, the Cardinals offense moved. Desmond Moses got pressure, and Ramique Wilson made a nice tackle. A couple of names that we hadn't talked about through this game so far. Although I would say that Wilson could have attacked that play better, but Moses got the good pressure there. And then the next play, Moses and Ford, D Ford, the first round pick last year, both got really fantastic edge pressure on Logan Thomas, who was in at quarterback for the Cardinals. But both of them somehow totally missed the sack. Thomas stepped up. I thought this was pretty interesting. Twice in the next play also, both Moses and Ford got great edge pressure again, but Thomas stepped up, made a great throw for a 1st down on that play. The Chiefs had only 2 down linemen lined up there, and they were both lined up essentially over each guard. So Thomas had a pocket to step up into. So even though Ford and Moses really got back, and the tackles for the Cardinals did an okay job of trying to keep them behind Thomas, but because there was no pressure from Nick Williams and Vaughn Martin, who were the defensive linemen there, Thomas had a nice little pocket to step up into to make this fantastic throw. So that's going to be something that's really important going forward here. And that's, again, I mentioned earlier, all the different formations we saw. This was an instance of 2 down linemen and then 2 linebackers in a 2-point stance. Linebackers got the pressure, but those guys up the middle did not get enough penetration up the middle, so Thomas made a nice play. But then Desmond Moses made another tackle for a loss. Daniel Sorensen had a nice blitz that forced a bad throw. Cardinals punted. Throughout the entire night, Desmond Moses ended up with 4 tackles for loss, 6 quarterback hurries, 4 stuffs. Those 6 pressures came on only 18 rushes. Those stats from Pro Football Focus through Twitter. So a fantastic night for Desmond Moses. I mentioned earlier that the Chiefs obviously have a lot of linebacker depth, but I think we're going to see Desmond Moses force himself into some playing time because he really had a very good showing last night. And then Ramique Wilson led the team with 5 tackles and his 1 pick, and Justin March had 4. Wilson, Moses, and March all had really nice games. And then DJ Alexander, the draft pick, can't forget about him. And then obviously, you remember James Michael Johnson was starting games last year. You obviously have Josh Malga, who's getting the money, and Derek Johnson, who's the anchor of that interior defense. Just there's a lot of linebacker depth going on with this Chiefs team now, and that's such a good problem to have. So again, I think we'll see these guys, some of these guys get released and then find new homes very quickly whenever camp cuts start coming down. And we could see, I would hate to see it, but I think we could see one of those two draft picks either get outright released, which would be really disappointing, or at least get really pushed on the bottom of the depth chart, because these undrafted guys, some of them are really making some noise. I went ahead and put the whistle there because this is almost its own segment, though it's definitely still about the game directly. It's about the second team offense and even the third team offense, I suppose, because there's a lot to take away from what we saw from the Chiefs in the second quarter and the second half. A lot of interesting stories, a lot of names that are slightly familiar but we haven't seen a lot of production from, or names that we have seen some stuff from but there's been a lot of questions about it. Let's go ahead and start then at the top, at the signal caller for the second team offense, Chase Daniel. He was mechanic against the Arizona, it was the backups, but against Arizona's backups. He was 17 for 21, 189 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks, a 143.8 quarterback rating. Per Pro Football Focus, he was 8 for 10 with 1 throwaway and a touchdown when he was under pressure. He had as many bad passes as touchdown passes whenever he had guys coming at him. That is a really exceptional stat for Chase Daniel. The ability to thrive under pressure is something that you only see like Ben Roethlisberger do on a level that really makes people do double takes whenever they watch it happen because he's so good at it. If you can really take on pressure, and we saw that's what burnt the Chiefs with that Carson Palmer play. They put pressure on Palmer and he found Ellington. It's what killed the Chiefs on that one pick that Alex Smith threw. He got pressured and couldn't get the ball out. That's what makes Peyton Manning so good with his quick release. He can take pressure and then get rid of the ball quickly enough to where you're not feeling the effects of it. Chase Daniel did a phenomenal job of dealing with the pressure here, and that's one thing that makes him look like a real NFL quarterback. So Chase Daniel's showing on Saturday night, I think, should kill one narrative and may unfortunately begin another narrative entirely. The one that should be killed is the idea that Daniel might be traded or released before the season for cap reasons. Now, perhaps you could say this means he should be traded at a higher price. Maybe that a team like the Jets, you know, where Geno Smith got punched in the jaw and by a teammate and will miss 6 to 10 weeks, or any of these really quarterback needy teams, even more so than the Chiefs. Maybe they would pay up for Chase Daniel, but I don't see that. Even a guy like Matt Cassel in his prime, quote unquote his prime, where the Chiefs gave up that second round pick for him and Mike Vrabel. It's been a long time since I've said the name Mike Vrabel. That was a second-round pick. Chase Daniel did not play an entire regular season and look good. He had some good days whenever he got on the field in regular season, and he had a nice preseason game here playing against backups. I can't see the Chiefs getting much in return for Chase Daniel, and I think he definitely has a place on this team. Now, not this next narrative that I'll get to in a second, I suppose, but I think if Smith goes down at any point, if he's out just for a couple of series, if he's out for an entire game, if he's out for 4 weeks, going from Alex Smith to Chase Daniel is not going to completely ruin this team's season. Going from Alex Smith to Aaron Murray, it might just do that. Now, so Reed and Doug Peterson, the offensive coordinator, obviously both think that Daniel is obviously the second-best quarterback on this team. As I just said, I obviously do now as well. And while it's still the preseason and against backups, we've seen Chase Daniel win a game in the NFL. We've seen it in real games. We've seen him perform in the preseason now. This year with this team, Aaron Murray, who was 0-for-1 with one sack, is nothing but a developmental prospect right now. And he might have a nice high ceiling. He might fit into the Chase Daniel, Alex Smith mold in the future. But as far as it goes right now, it doesn't seem like Reed or Peterson have a whole lot of faith or a whole lot invested in Aaron Murray, shown by the fact that he threw one pass against Arizona. But Daniel is a real NFL quarterback, and he can make plays. He can do it while being pressured, by being beaten around. A couple of his best throws came right while being blasted by somebody who went through the second team offensive line. So I've gained quite a bit of respect, but a lot of optimism about Chase Daniel's place on this team going forward. Now, the more controversial narrative that I'm afraid might get born in this preseason, depending on how Smith and Daniel both play, is that Chase Daniel is the better option than Alex Smith for this Chiefs team. I'm going to take this head on, I guess. Daniel had a fantastic game against the Cardinals. He looked very good. He threw more touchdown passes to receivers than Alex Smith did the regular season last year. Yada, yada. I get it. It was a great game. He's playing against backups, though, and Smith looked sloppy, and I get that as well, but he was playing a starting NFL defense. I think Smith is a clear cut above Chase Daniel, but I also don't think this is going to incite flames. I don't think it would matter that much for this Chiefs team between those two guys, because I think if Smith got hurt or had a few really miserable outings, maybe you could see Daniel, you know, getting some regular season playing time, giving him a shot. But this is Alex Smith's team, and it should be until Alex Smith gives it up. I think going from Chase Daniel to the top potential of Alex Smith is a big jump. Very good Alex Smith is very good. He's a top 15 NFL quarterback, and we don't know what Chase Daniel's his potential is, but I don't think it's that high. Now going from average Chase Daniel to average Alex Smith, I think that is very similar, or even good Chase Daniel to average Alex Smith. You can start to make that debate. But the ceiling of Alex Smith is simply higher than the ceiling of Chase Daniel right now. At least that's what the talent evaluators in the NFL think. That's what Andy Reid and Doug Peterson and John Dorsey all think. If they thought that it really was even footing, they wouldn't have given that money to Alex Smith. They'd be using that money, that cap space, elsewhere. They think Alex Smith is the superior quarterback between those two. I agree, although I'm very happy to have Chase Daniel as the second option for this team. Speaking of other options, let's go to the running backs now. Charcandrick West had 6 carries for 49 yards with a 34-yard run, and he caught 3 passes for 43. I'm very reserved when it comes to Nile Davis. I said that earlier. I wouldn't be surprised then to see West get a little bit of an increased role this year if he ends up making the team, which I know sounds kind of silly. Sure, he'll get a lot of touches if he gets on the roster at all. I'll get to the other option here in just a second. But I don't think as highly of Nile Davis as many Chiefs fans do. He has the potential, but he doesn't have the vision right now, and his potential doesn't reach those heights that it could yet. And then obviously that's what potential is. The entire point of potential is saying he could get here, he's not here right now. I don't think the Chiefs should cut Nile Davis, and I think that he might be the second best running back on this team overall. But the things that Charcandrick West can do are very different things than what Nile Davis can do. So I think West is going to have a nice role on this team. I think we could see him have stat lines like 6 for 50 and catch 3 passes a game, because that's the kind of thing that he can do to give Jamaal Charles a little bit of a breather. Now the other name to know from the running back position for the Chiefs is Darren Reeves. Now, he's a second-year running back. He went to UAB. If you're completely obsessed with fantasy football, you might remember his name from he had a couple of games with the Panthers last year where he got double-digit carries in back-to-back games, and he had 12 carries for 41 yards on Saturday. Now, especially with no Charles on Saturday, and especially assuming that he won't get very much, if any, work for the rest of the preseason, we're going to see plenty of Nile Davis, assuming he comes back from his injury by the game on Friday. Charcandrick West and Darren Reeves, we're going to see them all get plenty of carries, plenty of touches before the real season begins. And I think the Chiefs have a lot of improvement, a lot of room for improvement behind Jamaal Charles. Now, again, I know people like Nile Davis. I know you want to feel good about Charcandrick West. You want to say, oh, Darren Reeves, yeah, maybe he'll do something. There's so much room for improvement behind Charles. And we've seen this theory or this strategy used so well from the Chiefs in the last 10 years or so. Think back to Priest Holmes, this dominant, wonderful running back who every Chiefs fan just absolutely adored and still does adore, if we're being honest. But then Larry Johnson shows up. Larry Johnson gets groomed. Larry Johnson starts to really perform, takes a little bit of that load from Priest Holmes, and then eventually Larry Johnson takes over the helm. Larry Johnson's dominant for his couple of years there. And then Jamaal Charles shows up. Charles starts to get some playing time. People go, oh, look at Jamaal Charles making plays. Larry Johnson goes. Jamaal Charles takes over and becomes one of the best running backs in the league. This incumbent successor on the roster at the same time lineup has been so good to the Chiefs with Holmes and LJ and now Jamaal Charles, obviously. I don't see that guy on this roster right now. I don't think it's Nile Davis. I think Nile Davis is a stopgap kind of guy. I don't think it's Charcandrick West. I don't think it's Darren Reeves. I thought we might see the Chiefs draft a running back this year in the third or fourth round and make that the next take a shot on a guy like Jamaal Charles to eventually take that spot. We didn't. I also don't think that the Chiefs think that now Davis is the guy to take over the load after Charles is done. So I'd like to see the Chiefs keep turning that position unless they really think they have something in Charkandrick West, Nile Davis, or Darren Reeves. But regardless of what they think, watching those guys in the preseason is going to be very, very interesting because we're going to see what they think and how they actually perform in full pads playing against teams other than their own. The last big note from the second team offense comes to the position that was the most bare last year, the wide receivers. One story, in my opinion, clearly rose above the rest for the Chiefs receivers, not just the first or second team, but the entire offense. Fred Williams led the team in receptions and yards, 6 catches for 82 and a touchdown. He's a 27-year-old rookie, undrafted free agent, went to St. Cloud State in Minnesota. He got open, he made plays, he pushed himself into the conversation for those bottom-of-the-roster wide receiver spots. And he had a nice connection with Chase Daniel. Now, that connection to Chase Daniel doesn't mean much whenever Chase Daniel's not playing and not throwing the ball in the regular season. But I think we're actually going to see him get some run with the first team either throughout the rest of training camp or maybe in a couple of places in the preseason. He's that guy right now. He's that one offensive player that you want to keep getting extra looks at. And whenever he gets released, we'll all be sad. Or whenever he makes the team, we'll all go, hey, Fred Williams. I had hopes about Fred Williams, and look at where he is now. Maybe he's going to be a factor on this team. Now, it's hard to convince myself at this point that he actually will be a factor on this team. He had one nice preseason game against a bunch of backups running with the backups. But if a receiver can get separation, make plays, catch the ball, catch a touchdown for the Chiefs, I am very, very willing to give that guy some playing time, give him a chance to prove himself, because right now, Jeremy Maclin is the number one guy. Albert Wilson is your second best receiver. Basically, everything else is open for grabs, in my opinion, at least. I can't say that John Dorsey definitely feels the same way. Jason Avant's the veteran presence, and DeAnthony Thomas will be on the roster. But there is so much uncertainty with wide receivers. I'd love to see Fred Williams actually make this team. Two other receivers who are in that conversation, Deron Brown and Frankie Hammond, both also had touchdowns. Those guys will, although essentially likely lose or win a receiver job based on the special teams, but if the Chiefs could extend beyond their bottom of the roster receiver for special teams and get to the Albert Wilson of 2015, where last year we were looking at him in the preseason going, hey, Albert Wilson, he's getting some buzz, and usually those guys don't actually, they weren't the buzz in the preseason, and they either don't make the team at all or make the team and then just disappear. But Albert Wilson obviously really developed throughout last season in a pretty big way, to the point where right now I think he's the second best receiver on this team and would be the best receiver if the Chiefs hadn't gone out and signed Jeremy Maclin, which would be a disaster. But if Brown, Hammond, Frankie Hammond's been on the roster, but if Brown, Hammond, or Fred Williams, any of those guys in that conversation can actually make a contribution on offense, that would be a huge, huge factor for this Chiefs team that really needs a couple other receiving options that Alex Smith can trust. Injury updates that I mentioned earlier, it's a MCL sprain for Jeff Allen, a calf sprain for DeAnthony Thomas, a knee sprain for Nile Davis, Eric Kush has a shoulder contusion. All of those sprains are expected to need a few days. Wouldn't shock me to see all of them or any of them held out for the next preseason game. Not as sure about Eric Kush and his timetable. Andy Reid talked about Chris Conley, said, quote, we suited him up and got a good workout with him. We lathered him up, but just chose to just hold him out for another week. No hurry to get him back, I suppose, although getting him in real game situations with real game speed is going to be big because I think he's the other valuable weapon among the receivers who is easy to forget about because he hasn't done anything yet. So getting him back will be great, but again, in this case, the most important thing is just avoiding injuries. Speaking of injuries, one of the biggest injuries of the last week or so on a national scale affects the Chiefs directly. Kevin White, the rookie Bears receiver, who was mocked to the Chiefs in a lot of mock drafts this year, first-round pick, he will miss the Chiefs-Bears game in Week 5 with his injury. So that's a big blow to the Bears when that Chiefs game comes around, and it's obviously an advantage for Kansas City. Not as big of an advantage, I would say, as the Texans losing Arian Foster for Week 1. And then speaking of the Texans, head coach Bill O'Brien, per Adam Schefter, said that quarterback Ryan Mallett will start Houston's second preseason game this week versus Denver. So it's Brian Hoyer versus Ryan Mallett. Either way, I feel awfully good about the Chiefs going to Houston in Week 1. Even though it's on the road, and road games in the NFL are difficult, and they have J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney, Alex Smith will be having a bad day. I'll go out and say that now. I think Eric Fisher is taking nice steps forward, but I don't think he's going to be able to handle J.J. Watt by himself, and I don't think that Jeff Allen or Donald Stephenson is going to be a great matchup against Jadeveon Clowney. I'm not that absurdly optimistic, but that Houston offense is in really, really rough shape right now. Looks pretty good for the Chiefs in Week 1 as that all unfolds. Phillip Rivers got a new contract, 4 years, $84 million, $65 million guaranteed in new money. He'll be the quarterback of the Chargers for at least the next 4 seasons, assuming nothing really funky happens with his cap number and restructuring. I hesitate to say it's a bad move for the Chargers. I do think that Rivers is probably you're looking more like a year or two of Rivers being at the current level he's at before he starts to decline. But at this point, the Chargers didn't have better options. You never have better options than a top 12 quarterback unless you're the Colts in the year that Andrew Luck is available while Peyton Manning is injured. That happens once in 100 years. So locking up Rivers for 4 more years, it makes sense for the Chargers. I'm also not horrified. I'm not terribly disappointed from a Chiefs fan perspective. It's like I was, you know, when Peyton Manning went to Denver. It's neither horrible nor great on either side. It just makes sense. Gil Brandt wrote an article picking the Chiefs to win the AFC West and why he thought they would, why they are poised to dethrone the Denver Broncos in the AFC West, he wrote. Number one was the presence of an honest-to-goodness receiving threat. Jeremy Maclin's presence is going to be enormous, as if we haven't talked about that plenty this year. Second, he said the Chiefs can expect much more from the offensive line, which I happen to agree with in a big way, as we've talked about endlessly throughout this offseason. One interesting statement he has here, though, his third point, is Alex Smith can be a better quarterback. He writes, Smith is a vastly underrated player, often dismissed as a game manager, but with Maclin on board and the offensive line improving, I see the quarterback shedding that label. The former number one overall pick has had 4 consecutive winning seasons, piling up an overall record of 38-16-1 as a starter with the Niners and the Chiefs in that span. Last season, he posted a touchdown-to-interception ratio of 18-6 with a passer rating of 93.4. I talked to the very confident Smith for about 30 minutes, and I can tell you he feels good about his receivers. He looked pretty good in camp. In fact, I can see him having his best season in 2015. That's high praise from someone who knows what he's talking about with the NFL. Gil Brandt, all over the Alex Smith bandwagon. I welcome you aboard, Mr. Gil Brandt. His fourth point, they still have Jamaal Charles. We still have Jamaal Charles, and that's a fabulous, fabulous thing to remember. And then number five, the defensive backs will be better. He talks about the issues that they had, and then bringing in Tyvon Branch, drafting Steven Nelson, Marcus Peters, Eric Berry coming back, obviously, the development of Philip Gaines. Number six, Derek Johnson will be back. He's back. He looks very good so far. Obviously, the lack of Derek Johnson last season was enormous, and his presence returning, and the fact that he looks awfully good so far, huge step up. Number seven is interesting also. He says their schedule and the Broncos slate will help. Now, we've looked at the Chiefs schedule a little bit. It's very difficult at the top, but Gil Brandt writes it like this. He says, quote, the Chiefs have lost 6 straight to Denver, but the way their schedule shakes out, they'll have an early chance to deliver a significant blow to their divisional rival. After opening at Houston, a much easier proposition now that said Texans running back Arian Foster will be out as he continues to recover from groin surgery, Kansas City returns home to welcome Denver for Week 2's Thursday night matchup. The Broncos, meanwhile, will be coming off of what promises to be a tough home matchup with Baltimore. Given that it can be challenging to travel for a road game on a short week like that, the Chiefs should have an opportunity to beat Denver for the first time since 2011 and start 2-0 while potentially dropping the Broncos to 0-2. That's almost a fantasy land for me. I don't want to think that way. I'm afraid of thinking about what I would feel like if the Chiefs started off 2-0 and the Broncos were 0-2 and the Chiefs won in Arrowhead. I would be a train wreck because I would be so happy. That's a scary thought to realize how just energetic and absolutely thrilled I would be for that. And so I'm afraid to think that optimistically right now. But I also like that someone on a national scale is thinking that way. It makes me feel like it's actually kind of feasible, not just a pipe dream. Number 8, he says they return a stellar coaching staff. And number 9, Casey spent some money. Paying Justin Houston, going to get Jeremy Maclin. Talked about those moves ad nauseum, but it's a really good article there from Gil Brandt. I'll link to it in the article on Arrowhead Addict if you want to read it word for word. Doing these shows into the early hours of the morning has been exhausting, but this show in general was just kind of exhausting. I feel like all of my energy that came from that preseason game, and yes, a preseason game, just got poured out here. So I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you very much for listening to Roughing the Kicker here on Arrowhead Addict Radio. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. You can get to me on Twitter at JB Briscoe. Let me know what you like, don't like, want to hear more of specific topics or questions. I would love to answer them on there. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on iTunes or whatever subscription you use. Never miss another episode. And get involved in the comments on Arrowhead Addict. Talk to all the other people who are still spending their time listening to this show because we can feel the Chiefs season coming. As always, though, again, thank you for listening. If it wasn't for you and your feedback and the conversation we can have together, I'd just be a crazy person talking to a microphone by myself in my basement at 2 a.m., which I guess is what I'm doing anyway, but it's different because I know you're listening. I'm so excited for real football again, I can't even tell you. Bye, Mom!
Excuse me, sir, but could you drop the bass? Bass.